0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. At 51551 is our text number. David Mantell, what are you blaming electric cars for?
Well, I'm not direct. Well, I've noticed that on my travels down the country that the amount of crows that have been killed has increased a lot. And I know, like, when I approach them in the car, this is always early morning when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
They scatter. But, so on my last trip to Leitrim, I pulled in for about 20 minutes just observing.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't scatter as quick when electric cars are coming towards them. So I mean, there has to be a reason for it because, I mean, it has increased hugely over the last 24 months.
What you're saying is quite logical, isn't it? You think there's an increase in roadkill, especially with boards, because they don't hear the electric cars.
Exactly, yeah.
But have you noticed an increase in roadkill?
Oh, I have, yeah. But I was wondering what it was, because generally you get the odd fox and an odd crow.
Course,
I mean, there has been crows quite close to me that, you know, I don't know what they were doing. They're just too slow to pull off. But no, it has increased a lot. Hugely, yeah.
Okay, stay with us, because Jane Hammond Kelly phoned us about cats, missing cats. Jane.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
And whereabouts are you?
Well, we're down in Count Carlow. I run the Carlow SPCA. So I suppose the opportunity to highlight probably why people's cats go missing, and I would have made a report a short while ago to say that, you know, there is somebody deliberately removing cats from their homes. And
what, are they catnapping?
No, not so much that, but people, there's lots of reasons why cats go missing, but if one disappears into thin air, you can be 100% sure that somebody has removed it or done away with it. And it's mostly people that keep birds, not to specify any you know, anybody, but mostly people that keep pigeons or birds or people that don't like cats, that have, like, to feed the birds in the garden, stuff like that.
But if they have birds as a hobby, they're normally caged, aren't they?
They would be, but that doesn't come into it. If people are trying to mind their birds, then the cats go in, and it's not wild. It's not your pet cat will go in and try to catch a pigeon to eat it. It'll be a feral cat who these people will never see, and they definitely won't catch them unless they trap them. But it's usually the little pet cats who's not afraid of humans, and he might wander into that garden.
You say, I think disappearing cats is an ongoing problem, and that there has been an escalation over the last two years. But where are the cats going?
Well,
you're saying they're being killed.
Yes, they are, yeah.
Did you come across that story about the southwest German town of Waldorf? They've cat owners for 3 months this summer, until the end of this month, actually. Cat owners cannot let their cat outdoors because there is a rare bird, the crested lark, breeding in the area, and it is breeding season. Now, if your cat in the German town of Waldorf, if your cat is seen outside your hall door or your home or whatever, your apartment, you're fined €500. Okay? If your cat is seen attacking a crested lark, wait for it, the fine is €50,000.
That's so good for them.
So you think that's good enough for them?
Because any responsible cat owner will keep their cats in, and they will make little tweaks here so they don't catch the wild birds, like put a collar on them with a bell on it to alert the bird if it's coming up. Now, that's a responsible pet owner. Then you have the pet owners who think, should the cat be all right outside, but it won't. Its biggest predator is other humans.
And does any other... A dog wouldn't attack birds, would it?
Ah, he would, yeah.
Well, yeah, okay, but not the way a cat does.
No, no, I mean, it's okay. normal for cats to chase birds.
Bob Flavin is back to the dead birds on the roads, David Mantell. And the blaming, which seems incredibly logical, blaming electric cars. The birds don't hear, and they're, what was the phrase? They were flattened. Bob Flavin, is this a, I know you're a motoring correspondent, Bob. What percentage of cars in Ireland now are electric?
Still talking about 16 or 17%, Joe, but it depends on how you count electric. So it's if you're counting what's called plug-in electric, which have a petrol engine, but they're also electric, and they have some hybrids in there. All these cars are fairly quiet.
Yeah.
There was no legislation covered at one point, so the cars were totally silent when they started off first. Now we have European legislation that means they have to make noise up to 18 or 20 kilometres an hour, give or take. And it's a kind of a drone sound, but it doesn't sound like a car. So animals that are used to kind of crossing the road in front of cars, it doesn't sound like a car. It just sounds like a bit of a noise in the distance.
And have David's noticed this new phenomenon of more dead birds on the road, and he's putting it down to electric cars.
Well, some of them, yeah, some of it would be, of course, the sound of cars. Cars in themselves have gotten quieter. We do have sound legislation coming from the EU saying 75 decibels is the full volume of a tyre passing by. Now, on country roads, you'd never achieve enough speed to get that noise out of it. So on back roads, you would have much quieter, even just modern petrol cars, much quieter speed. Lots of good evidence suggesting like wind turbines are also killing birds because big propellers, they can't even see it coming. They don't make any noise.
Wasn't there a problem initially with the Samuel Beckett Bridge with the stays, the wires or the cables, rather, the steel cables on Samuel Beckett Bridge? That's swans were flying into them and ending up injured on the bridge because they couldn't see them. Now, I think
that's been addressed.
Diana Cassidy, 51551joe@rte.ie. Diana.
Hi, Joe.
what do you, is this a new phenomenon, electric cars killing animals?
Well, I
accidentally.
Yeah, I don't know if it's related to that, but I live about 6 miles west of Cork City.
Yeah.
And up to a few years ago, if you saw one, the occasional dead fox on the road, it'd be as much.
Okay.
Last year, in the space of about a week, there were 3 dead foxes within the same mile. And over the last few weeks or a few months, there have been a couple more dead foxes that I've seen.
So what are you thinking? What are you thinking?
Well, someone did suggest that there was a rumour that farmers were putting out more poison for foxes.
Wow, that's...
But when I heard the bit there about crows not responding to... And I was just wondering, because on a similar note, a friend of mine who's totally blind, and she said that she nearly got knocked down a couple of times by electric cars because she couldn't hear them.
Of course. Yeah, but I'm just wondering, you would know... would you know, Diana, if a fox had been knocked down by a car or had been poisoned by a farmer?
It's very difficult for me as an observer to tell which is which.
Course,
but
yeah.
When they're on the side of the road and they're dead, it could be that if they had been poisoned by a farmer, that they were dazed and hit by a car normally.
Well, that's
but
a good point.
This hasn't happened. Now, surely it would be possible to put some kind of noise-making item in with the engine so at least
Bob,
it can be heard.
Yeah, but Bob is making the point that... Bob, you're saying there are EU regulations. The noise can only be a certain... People want less noise in their life, Bob, don't they, rather than more?
They do. If you live anywhere near the M50 or you live anywhere near a large motorway, just walk across the bridge of an M50. Just try and have a conversation with the person next to you. It's an impossible sound to cope with, and it's constant. So the research right now is going into making tires quieter. Cars are already quieter if they're electric, but we're trying to make that. For the first time in history, we're trying to research how to make cars make noise. We've never had to worry about this before. They've always made noise. Now they don't make any noise. We're trying to figure out what's the best noise.
Diana.
Just a small, it doesn't have to be as loud as a normal car, but just some kind of small, you know, like, I was going back a bit, remember on bicycles when you're kids and you have these clackers on the spokes?
Yeah, but Diana, have you ever, well, my experience is at Parmesound Cemetery in Parmesound, obviously in Dublin, near Ballyfermot, but I unfortunately spend a good bit of time, especially in the last few years, the drone from the N50 when you stand in that cemetery is unbelievable. And I won't make any jokes about waking the dead or whatever, but the drone of the M50 is, you couldn't live there. You not live there.
Yeah, absolutely. But just basically just to, because if you've got a silent car, you're going to have people who have difficulty in hearing and difficulty in seeing who can't hear the car.
Yeah, but...
So having something coming at you about 60 miles an hour and you can't hear it is going to be a bit scary. So it doesn't even have to be as loud as a normal engine, but just something.
OK, Bob, help me out here.
I'd love to have a noise that would be in there. The noises the cars already make up to 18 kilometres are artificial sounds. And I've been to Norway recently and stood in Oslo city centre where EV population is well in excess of 60%.
Wow.
And it's weird to stand in a city centre, and I can't really explain this properly on the radio, but you can imagine standing in the city centre of Dublin right now and all you can hear is the voices of the people talking around you.
But isn't that lovely?
It's fantastic. It's unbelievably good. Now, I know the offset of that is that the cars are so quiet that people can get knocked down by them, but it's very hard to find that balance between the two, is what noise you're supposed to make and why do you even want them to make noise? Because it's amazing. Just go to Oslo standards. It's like a goggle.
But Diana, is that not a good point that Bob is making? I'm going to extend it a little bit. That, like, in Dublin, around Dublin Airport, the DAA are giving €6 million in grants to homes near Dublin Airport to insulate them against noise.
Oh, yeah.
People hate that noise. Have you ever heard the roar of a motorbike overtaking a car?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's horrific.
I totally get that, Joe. I'm not saying there's anything against it. But in saying that, some form of noise, I mean, I'm not saying that this is correct, but if, for instance, a normal car engine noise is, say, 100 decibels.
Yeah.
And an electric car is 0.1 of a decibel.
Yeah.
Just have something maybe about 10 decibels.
Look at the Lewis. The Lewis is an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful sound. It's a low sound. And then you have the Mr. Whippy Bell off at every minute or so.
Absolutely. At least then it's not a continuous high noise, high level noise. It's just something to make a slight sound that at least it can be heard by those who either have maybe by nature or by those who have difficulty in hearing or seeing.
You see, Jane, I'm not saying you're an expert on boards, Jane, but I've always been mesmerised when you are travelling on a motorway, how quickly boards can get out of your way. But that's when they hear your car. They are incredibly quick.
Joe, birds can see more than we can. Like, I live in the countryside, and at this time of the year, you're going to see lots of birds killed on the road because the harvest is in full swing and there's loads of food for them on the side of the road. So you're going to see more birds killed. Doesn't matter whether it's a noisy engine or a quiet engine. Also, there's a lot of little juvenile foxes going around at the moment, and they don't have any road sense.
Cubs, yeah.
And sadly, they get knocked down as well. We save loads of foxes this time of the year.
OK, Tom Canty is in Cork. Tom.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What's your theory, Tom?
Well, the theory that I think will only stand up to scientific research would be that during the COVID, there was absolutely no shooting of birds or culling of birds because people were not allowed to travel more than 5 kilometres or
Good
2 kilometres.
Good point.
And the fact that they didn't, that they weren't shot meant that there was more actually birds breeding, which means there was a bigger and a greater amount of birds flying across the roads in 2022. And if there's more birds, there's going to be more killed. I think the percentage you might find would be the same or actually less.
Yeah, but as I said, the first caller was making, David Mantel was making the point that he's noticed an appreciable increase in dead birds on the road, and he's putting it down because I don't know if I got to say it to him, but he said that he stopped one stage and he observed an electric car taking out a flock of crows. There were
a flock of crows.
Well, he said. What's it called? Yeah. A murder of crows,
yeah.
Sorry, bear with me on that.
No, yeah.
Well, you saw an electric car murdering a murder of crows.
Right, but, yeah, and, you know, it's...
And he told them to flock off.
Yeah, but there's only, so I guess there's only 16. If there's only 16% of the cars in the country being sold electric.
But that's Tom. That's one in five.
Yeah, but the point is, there's most of those are in the cities, right? Because there's very few charging points. If you come down
good
to West Cork,
you need
a tow truck to follow you around, right?
Yeah,
there is no place to actually charge your electric car.
So you're saying it's the Dubliners that are killing all the country boards?
No, I'm saying it's the Dubliners are killing the tourism areas in Kerry and Cork with their noisy selves, you know.
Okay.
And
that's just their voice. That's before they get in the cars. Okay, Tom Canty, Jane Hammond Kelly, Bob Flavin, Diana Cassidy, and David Mantel. Go to Emile Margaret 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
RT.ie, Patricia. Patricia, good afternoon. So the line is gone. By the way, it gives me an opportunity to mention the beginning and the end of next week. Monday is the Michael Collins special on Liveline. If you have, and we're looking for, as the fella said, we're not looking for historians. They will be, thankfully, everywhere this weekend. We're looking for people who have stories of through their own family of Michael Collins, or memorabilia of Michael Collins, or indeed of the day that Michael Collins I'm told they don't like using the word assassinated, that he was killed in combat down at Baile na Blá. And if you have, just contact us here at joe@rt.ie. We've already have a fantastic collection of people who've contacted us who will go through nearly minute by minute where their members of their family were that morning and that afternoon, and above all that evening around the area of Baile na Blá. That's next Monday. And then next Friday, we're in the end of the month, we're in Faithleg House Hotel. It's outside Waterford, which can be a little bit awkward for people to get to, but maybe people could bunch in together or whatever. And but we're in the Faithleg Hotel for Funny Friday with the usual Funny Friday crew. Loads of giveaways, loads of fun, loads of music, loads of bonuses, and above all, loads of laughs. And God knows we need them. Okay, Patricia O'Connor, you're an old age pensioner. You're saying you're not laughing, you're fuming. Why?
I am absolutely fuming. Can you hear me now, Joe?
Loud and clear.
Yeah. Because at lunchtime, I was listening to the news, and I was listening to them talking about giving rises to pensioners.
Yeah, Michael McGrath, the Minister
for... Yeah, exactly. And throughout all the discussions on the cost of living and then the rise, you know, in pensions, they seem to forget that there's a group of us still out here who are actually on reduced pensions, because in the Fianna Fáil Labour government, in the after the collapse of the country, Joan Burton decided to change the pension rules. And there's a lot of people of my age who would have been very fond of Joan Burton, but after this,
okay,
we weren't.
How did it affect you?
Well, basically, I was born after 1948, and I was a civil servant in my first job.
Okay.
So, if you were a civil servant at that stage, you didn't pay PRSI. You paid widows and orphans. That's
okay.
What you paid, which was a payment that a woman would never be able to claim. And then, basically, I took some time out to have children. Unfortunately, I didn't have children, and then I went back to education. So, basically, they consider the length of time that you have worked. So, they consider that I had worked from the very first day I started in CIE, which was in 1967. So, I worked 50 years, and they divide it by something, and they come up, and I'm on a reduced pension of €215.70. And there's a lot of women like me. There aren't, you know, it isn't just me and a few. There are actually quite a lot of women like me. And the full rate of an old age pension, this is a contributory old age pension, is €253.30.
Okay, so you're down
40 euro,
nearly 40,
basically.
38, 39
yeah.
euro.
Yeah.
Okay.
And out of that pension, my
and
property...
that's 40 euro a week. Let's
yeah,
be clear.
40 euro
yeah.
a week. Yeah. And out of that pension, my property tax is taken at source. So actually, I get €208.78. That's what I get.
Your property tax is taken at source.
Yeah, it's just
that. Is that with your agreement, or?
Well, it is with my agreement,
okay,
actually,
yeah.
Because it would be whatever it would be per year. So the property tax is taken at source. but it's still another tax that's taken.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So, and my husband also has a reduced pension because he was self-employed. And he really never got back to work after the downturn.
Yeah.
And he developed Parkinson's disease. So from that time on, I have supported him. And I worked up until...
And many people do you think are on a reduced pension, Patricia, from your
research? It's very difficult to know. It's probably about 40, 45,000, I think. We had a campaign about 5 years ago, and the minister acknowledged that women who took some time off, up to 20 years, to rear their children, would actually get that as a credit. So a lot of them actually got full pensions. But it left all the other people...
And then describe the category. Are they civil servants? Public servants, civil servants? Is there? Can you put a name on the category that are now disenfranchised, so to speak?
It would be a lot of women who actually were civil servants at the very beginning, yeah, because they didn't pay PRSI. But you're considered to have started working the first day that you started working
now,
in the civil service.
Now, if we get on to the Department of Social Protection, they would say to us, well, if there's a shortfall... go to your local community welfare officer.
Joe, I'm a person who's worked. I've worked nearly all of my life, you know?
Yeah.
The idea, and I don't mean to, you know, the idea of going to a community welfare officer. I own my own house. I have a car, you know? The idea of going to a community welfare officer is absolutely... It's not that it's beyond me, because eventually people might have to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People might be obliged to do that.
Yeah.
But it's just, when I hear them talking about pensioners, it's as if every pensioner is on 253 euro. They're
good
the same.
Point.
And in actual fact, they're not the same, you know?
Yeah.
And if one of them would come out and acknowledge that there's a group of pensioners still there who are getting reduced pensions.
Unfairly getting reduced pensions.
Unfairly, because it was brought in as an answer to the fact that our country was bankrupt. That's the only reason it was brought in. Joan Burton said she was obliged to bring it in. It was brought in. Now, I know there are real problems around pensions,
mm-hmm.
but when you expected to get a full pension at the end, and all of a sudden, in the middle of it, the rules are utterly changed, and you're on a reduced pension. To be honest, Joe, if my husband dies, my only choice is to sell my house. That's my only choice.
Oh, God. And then where do you go?
Yeah, I know. You have to buy... I don't know. I really, really, really don't know. And I know there are other women out there who are on exactly the same thing. And, I mean, my other thing is to actually say I go on to a non-contributory old age pension,
mm-hmm.
which is higher, and it's probably what I will actually have to do. But I really don't see why, after working all of my life and contributing and paying tax all of my life, and my husband did exactly the same thing, why they should say you should go on to a non-contributory old age pension, which is means tested, and which means if we were lucky enough to win something and to go out of the country for 6 months, our pensions would stop, because you can't go out of the country.
And how are you managing now with the cost of living crisis, as they call it?
To be absolutely honest, I don't know what we're going to do for the winter with the heating. I really, really just don't know. At the moment, my heating, I have bored gas. And it's 400 euro a month. That's what it is for the electricity and the gas, because it's spread out over the whole year. Now, that's 400 euro out of 1,700 euro in the month.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone out. That's
so
electricity.
So a quarter, just under a quarter.
Yeah, it's a quarter. It's just gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, I was actually saying, you know, there are a lot of people living in nice little houses that look quite comfortable, but that are actually very poor.
And Patricia, are you planning for the winter? Are you saying to yourself, well then, if I try and operate out of one room rather than...
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at things, you know, can we put, could we possibly get a grant for extra insulation in the roof and that sort of thing,
you know? You might get a grant, but can you possibly get a builder?
Precisely. Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, we had to go and I had applied for a grant for, because my husband has Parkinson's, I had to apply for a grant to get a new bathroom put in. But it was taking so long, I had to go and use the small amount of savings that we have to actually get the invalid bathroom put in. What I'm sort of trying to say is, all of my life, you know, I worked, I did the bits, I was interested in politics, and I was involved in politics for a very long time. And at this stage in my life, at 71, I feel, no, we're forgotten about.
And
there are other women out there, and I'm sure there will be other women who will ring in to say, yes. I mean, the lowest pension people can receive, it's 165, and there are some women on a pension of 165 euro per week. And how they manage, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband...
A few people said to me they're doing... I've nearly said stupid little things, but they're not simple little things, like they're going to buy a flask, and when they boil the kettle, they're going to put the kettle into the flask, which sounds an awful lot of work. But anyway, to stop them boiling the kettle all the time, but that's not going to save that much.
No, it's not. I mean, you're going to see, you're going to see, I mean, people need to be warm, and particularly older people need
Absolutely.
To be warm. No, I'm a very active 71-year-old, so I'm not like, you know, I'm able to get up and get around.
Yeah, you're lucky enough, yeah.
But my husband has Parkinson's disease, and he would get very cold during the winter.
Okay.
You know? So,
There's nothing worse. Stay with us, Patricia. You don't want to tell me what political party you're involved in, do you? It's up to yourself.
Sure, Joe, you know me. I was in the Students' Union of Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah, when you were in the Students' Union of Ireland.
Okay.
I was in the Workers' Party, and then I was in Democratic Left.
Yeah, and then did you go into the Labour Party when the Workers' Party went to Democratic Left?
It was a step too far.
Okay. But the Workers' Party still exists, doesn't it?
It does. But I left when the split came.
And Brock, Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And how come you're on a... go ahead, sorry.
Can you hear me?
Loud.
I just heard that lady on the phone, and I'm one of those people that got reduced pension. And I have a leaflet that I cut out of the Independent a couple of years ago.
Right.
And it says, refund on way for cheated pensioners. 79,000 recipients had payments cut during recession. I went about it, and I didn't get the money I was entitled to, Joe.
And the 70,000 that the newspaper report said would get back pay, did they ever get it?
When I rang up the social welfare about it, the chap told me they only went back to 1946, and unfortunately I was born in 1944.
Ah, for God's sake.
Yeah, so I know exactly where that woman is coming from.
Mom, what did you say to him? Like, I'd no hand act apart when I was born.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like most married women, I was worked in the printing before I was married. Then when I got married and had children, a lot of places didn't take women back once they got married. And then when my children were reared, I went back to work in 1982. I worked for 27 years and I was told I wasn't entitled to a full pension.
So do you mind me asking, are you in the same situation as Patricia, do you think, 215 rather than 260?
No, I guess I'm down to fiver. I get 248, Joe.
Okay.
It's gone up. I think when I started to get a force, I think it was only 235.
And every little helps. Every little. How are you?
Exactly.
And how are you managing in the cost of living?
Well, I'm very lucky because I live with my daughter and a husband and two children.
Okay.
And that's how I manage, Joe.
So in terms of heat and things like that, you can be...
They're extremely good to me.
Okay. Let's see what we get in. Because that's you're the second one in now, and people. And Patricia's annoyance is coming from this belief that every pensioner is on the same 258 or whatever, and they're not, as we're realising now. Okay, Patricia O'Connor, kind regards, and likewise
Thank
Anne
you.
Brock. I'm going to go to
Thank
Australia
you
now.
Much, Joe.
Thank you both. Thank you both. Joe at RT.ie 51551. We were talking on Tuesday to this whole GP scenario where. Began with people saying, why can't you get a GP visit anymore? Which seems to be true. A phenomenon that has ended in Ireland, GP home visits in the main. And the scenario then was raised by Matt Kiley, a doctor down in Annacrotty in Limerick. And he was saying that the reason is 500 doctors this year alone have gone to Australia. Now, Pádraig Donovan has contacted us. Pádraig, good evening. I know it is in Australia. When did you go to Australia and why?
So I went, I flew out last Thursday.
Okay.
Last Tuesday. Yeah, and I basically flew out just because I was so sick. I've only practiced medicine for a year in Ireland. And I was so horrifically burnt out after it that I just kind of forfeited. I took what's essentially the cowardly way out and went to Australia.
The cowardly way out? Why do you say that about yourself?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm only joking. Yeah, but everyone's okay.
So you're working as a doctor for a year. And tell us, what type of work were you doing?
So in your first year of medicine, after medicine, you do kind of 4 rotations.
Okay.
So I was contracted to do 39 hours a week. I kind of worked somewhere between 80 and 85 hours a week.
Wow.
It was horrific. It was really, really bad. You were just doing, all the bits and bobs, going seeing people, kind of generally the first person to see people on call, 24-hour shifts, just being wrecked all the time, really moody all the time, getting bleeped up your eyeballs all the time. Everyone was looking for you. Everyone was cross at you because, you were... I remember days where I was the only member of my team in. I was to do all the work of, 5 or 6 people. It obviously wasn't sustainable.
And, Pádraig, why did you pick Australia then? Obviously, you researched it.
It's bizarre. So the working conditions are, infinitely better, I can't even describe. Mm. So here we work 40 hours a week, and no more. And if you work a minute more, your consultant gets in trouble. When I actually looked into it, we get paid €15,000 extra to work here for the year. All your pay is accounted for. And you just don't have as much responsibility. You're not the only one running around.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a lot more manageable. There seems to be a lot more. The staffing is just brilliant. The staffing is insane. We were at induction there. We were at induction the other day, and it was so funny. There was in the room. There was maybe 14 doctors of my grade about to start, and there was 12 Irish and 2 Australians. And giving the presentation. She was telling us about the system, and all the Irish people are like, that can't be right. There can't be 5
Good
people
God.
Doing this job.
An induction at one induction course for one hospital, there was 14 medics starting, and 12 of them, 90% were from Ireland, 85%.
Oh, yeah.
That is incredible.
No.
And did you get chatting to any of them, Pádraig? In terms of why they left. Any of the Irish?
We've all left for the same reason.
Yeah.
I've moved out with a load of my friends and, people who really love home and really love Ireland and who really, really wanted to stay in Ireland. But it just wasn't sustainable. Obviously, the work was horrific. But then, with the housing crisis and et cetera, we just couldn't stay feasibly. Because, you could never set up life in Ireland.
Yeah. And do you want to tell me what your take-home was? You don't have to. What your take-home was after tax?
After tax, we were always emergency taxed. So we always lost loads of our money because of the rotational nature of medicine. But I think we were making somewhere between, sometimes I made €1,800 a month after working 65 to 80 hours. After getting emergency tax and money that I had to fight to get back, but sometimes you could make about 3 grand.
Mm-hmm. And you say to us, you may notice that my take-home pay is less than or equal to the average rent in Dublin.
Rent in Dublin, and don't worry, I've said that. I've said that many times. Yeah.
So where are you living in Australia?
So we've just moved into what I can only describe as a mansion. It's actually,
mansion.
We were awestruck when we walked into the house today. Beautiful home for less than we were paying in Dublin.
Good gas.
And like we lived outside the M50 in like a very bog standard gas.
Yeah. And how long do you think, insofar as you can predict, how long do you think you'll stay for, Pádraig?
So I'm definitely of the persuasion that I'll be staying indefinitely.
Okay.
I'm just in no rush to get back and work for the HSE after the way my year, the first year graduates were treated, and just seeing like the exhaustion that, you know, the more senior doctors at the SHOs, regs, and consultants were treated. I can't imagine why I would go back. You know, there's no allure to going back.
Yeah. I'd be very interested, because I think did you not talk to us before about you were threatening to leave? Now you've done it.
Yeah. No, I was kind of like, wanted to see for where I can.
You're so demoralised.
I was so fed up. Yeah, no, I think back then I had worked. I think I'd worked 19 calendar days in a row.
I remember that.
So
yeah,
You
were wrecked.
Yeah, I worked a full week in a peripheral hospital. Then on the Sunday, I had to move back to Dublin. Worked the full week. Then I got a call on Friday evening from the HR department in the Dublin hospital saying that I had to work a 24-hour shift on Saturday because someone else had called in sick. And I said, absolutely not, I'm wrecked, I won't do it. So they were like, Graham, not a bother. Look, I was like, look, keep me in the loop though, because I just, you know, I wouldn't like to see that anyone else stuck.
Yeah.
So they were like, yeah, Graham, not a bother. 5 o'clock comes by, no one calls me. I try to get onto the HR department to say, please, like, you know, I need to know. Am I shafting someone, essentially? So basically I walk into work Saturday morning at 8 o'clock and being like, God, I wondered if they got covered for me or not. And they didn't. And I just ended up working the 24-hour shift. And then finished 8 o'clock Sunday morning and then was back in work on Monday. Was kind of bargaining with my HR department.
You're a danger to yourself and to others.
No, it was horrific. It was horrific. I actually, very melodramatic, and put in an incident report about myself.
Okay.
I said, hi, I'm after working this amount of hours. You know, I'm not fit to work. It was a really particularly low point in my life. Mm. The way I ended up getting time off is I went into my consultant, who was absolutely lovely. I have to say the clinical staff in the HSE really put up with too much. So I went into my consultant and I said, hi, look, this is the kind of unfortunate situation that I have been put into from call and just with changeover and stuff. And I just felt so low. And I said, I just really can't do this anymore. And she then very graciously gave me a week off for stress leave. It was horrific.
And when you self-reported an incident, is that a particular incident? I don't want the details, obviously, but you're saying you reported yourself.
Yeah, so I just put in, you know, because I was like we all have private indemnity coverage, you know.
Yeah.
I just am quite aware that if anything was to have happened,
yeah, of course,
so
yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
Like nothing did, but I just don't. I don't feel like if anything had happened there. That, I don't know, maybe, I don't know who from the HSE would have said, look, not a bother, that was actually our bad. He was going to make a mistake. I was like, well, I want it noted that I fought this. I said I shouldn't be working 19 days. I didn't want anyone to be, any patient.
You wanted to be put on the record, if God forbid something happened, thankfully it didn't, that you wouldn't be able to be blamed.
Yeah, it was essentially my thing. I got an email from HR. I got an email from her tour being like, you can't, you know, that's not an appropriate thing to do. And I said, then what's appropriate? Essentially a near miss because something could have happened.
Okay. And did you get a sense from the other Irish that were at the 12, the other 11, the 12 apostles that went out from Ireland? Did you get a sense from the other 11 party that are they there for the long term in Australia?
So there's a good few of us who are. There's a lot of people who are kind of humming and hawing. Then I think kind of have seen the lifestyle over here and maybe will stay a little bit longer than 2 years. That's kind of the general thing. Most people come out for about 2 years.
Okay.
But yeah, there is a good few who are planning on staying.
Okay. Well, look after yourself, Padraig, and thanks indeed for that. By the way, did you ever get your emergency tax back?
Oh, so we did eventually.
You're entitled
to that.
I'd
like to point out, we did. One of the girls who actually just landed today, I just collected her from the airport, was working, and she's fighting for emergency tax back now. I think she's losing about half her wage in whatever hospital
crazy,
she was in.
Crazy.
But we didn't get our €1,000 either, which were a bit.
Yeah. Well, we're told that's to do with payroll and administration and the fact that it's coming from.
Oh no! So the first year doctors aren't entitled to it.
Oh, are they not?
So okay. So I finished my job. So you had to be working 2 weeks before we started working to be entitled to it. So my first job was in the COVID ward, and I only did COVID medicine for 3 months, and it was between the second and the third wave. And no, we're not entitled to like a cent.
Oh God. Okay, Padraig.
Yeah, no.
Well, listen, Padraig. Above all, Australia's lucky to have you, and stay well and stay in touch as well. That's Padraig Donovan in Australia. Joe at RTE.ie. Remember, we're in the Fate Lake Hotel in Waterford for Funny Friday on Friday week.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RTE.ie. Tony, you have one idea for all the Irish doctors going to Australia. As I said, nearly 500 this year alone, we're told. And we heard from Padraig there, his induction lecture in his hospital 5 days ago. 14 new medics, 12 of them from Ireland. Tony.
Joe, not surprising, really. I suppose we have a vicious circle here in Ireland. The HSE say that it takes €300,000 to train a doctor through our system.
Yeah.
So we take in some fabulous people, we give them great training, costs us €300,000. And then usually within a year or so, they go off to Australia, New Zealand, America, all the usual places. But Australia's a big one. So the Australians pay them $15,000 a year more. It's a very good deal for Australia. They have saved a fortune training their doctors. So they can pay them a relatively small amount more, and they get all the benefits without any of the costs. Now, the other side of that is, because we are losing so many doctors,
mm-hmm.
our hospitals and our GPs are under extreme pressure.
Yeah.
And they are fabulous people in there, absolutely walking themselves into the ground. But we have created this problem by our approach.
What are you proposing?
Well, I believe if you are given entry to a medical degree course to be trained as a doctor in Ireland, you should be committed to a minimum of 5 to 10 years working in the system after you've qualified. That way, we could recover the cost.
So you wouldn't be allowed to leave the country?
Joe, it's like any other contract you've signed up to. There is a
Social workers, engineers, journalists, architects, other technicians that go through third level, they're not obliged to stay in Ireland.
No, they're not obliged to stay in Ireland, but if you take engineers, many of them do. Social workers, we certainly have a challenge with social workers. We don't have enough of them. But people are dying, Joe.
What is the penalty then if a doctor decides, well, my partner's in Australia, I'm going out. What happens? You're going to stop them at Dublin Airport?
Well, what I would do is, you're signing up to a degree course. You're not being charged for the degree course. We're spending €300,000.
Well, you're paying €3,000 a year, aren't you?
Joe, we'll take away the €3,000. It's inconsequential as regards the training cost of a doctor.
Yeah, you can say that for a lot of courses, but anyway.
Absolutely.
That's third level, yeah.
The doctors, the shortage of doctors, it's a massive problem, Joe, and it's getting worse. And we are expecting the health service to deliver quality service.
Yeah, but the health service also has people. Sorry if we're going to cross you, Tony.
Yeah.
The health service also has doctors who weren't born here, born in India or Nigeria or Somalia or whatever.
Exactly.
You're saying we shouldn't allow them in, we should send them back to India?
Absolutely not.
What's good for the goose is not good for the gandy.
The point of making that, Joe, is it is wonderful that people come to our country to give us medical service. However, the concern I would have, those people are probably needed far more in their own countries, particularly third world doctors who come here. They have even less doctors than we have.
How can you force people to be somewhere they don't want to be?
Joe, what I'm saying here is, if you want to do a medical degree, you can do it in Ireland, and you have to stay here for 5 years. If you don't want to stay the 5 years and you have the money to do the medical degree, go somewhere else and do your medical degree and work wherever you like. This is too serious, Joe. I know it's fairly radical and it's quite severe, but what is the alternative?
The alternative is to live and is to make the job more attractive here, to make the tax system more attractive. You can't change the weather, obviously, to make accommodation more affordable. It's not simple. And you could argue as well that doctors from India, Nigeria, Somalia, Canada, wherever they come here, they're increasing some of their knowledge, and hopefully they will go back and bring. You know, that's what consultants do. They go away for experience, and it's you can't buy that stuff. So
but we're talking about junior doctors being worked to the bone. And the point you're making, I have no issues with making the tax systems more attractive or their salaries more attractive. But the point I made was, it's 300 grand to train a doctor. You give that 300 grand to Australia, they can pay a doctor 15 grand or more for 20 years. You're making us uncompetitive and making Australia more competitive.
Yeah.
That's why they're going. And also because of the workload. So
I understand that's why they're going, but I'm saying how can you physically stop them how can you get them back?
Joe, the vast majority of people, when they sign up to something, will honour it. Now, medicine is open technically to everybody, but we both know that many of the doctors who are training come maybe from a higher social level with higher salaries, where the parents can afford the high cost of rental in Dublin.
Well, it's not just the high cost, it's that the parental support and everything you hear for the Christmas mentioning that are in better off families, that isn't in working class families, books, education, grinds,
correct,
knowledge, contacts, network, etc., etc. But you still need 625 pints.
Right. Now, the pints, Joe, the bottom line here is you don't need 625 pints to be a doctor.
I know that. But under the current system, you need 625.
Absolutely. And, Joe, the current system is broken.
Okay, everything is broken. I know. But stay with us, Tony. Parik Donovan, do you want to comment on that? Would that stop you going to Australia?
Yeah.
Parik.
No, I suppose I probably wouldn't. I just don't think the answer to doctors giving out that medicine is so demoralising in Ireland is to add more punitive measures. Do you know what I mean? I just don't think that would do anything for people. I totally understand that, the fees for Dublin or the fees for, any university are 3 grand. But, when I worked it out with my parents, and I was really fortunate, I was exceptionally privileged. My parents paid for my education and my accommodation when I was in Dublin. So that gentleman is, dead right. There's a certain element of privilege in medicine that we can't forget about. But I think it worked out 12 to 13 grand to put me through college a year. So it's really expensive. Probably not more expensive than it is for other courses. And then just on top of that, as he mentioned, staying 5 years, I don't think people realise after you've gotten into medicine, which is exceptionally competitive to get into, you then have to go on to training schemes, which you're even more competitive to get into. You can't get onto them. So say for someone like me, what I want to do in the end is palliative care. I would love to do hospice care. Ireland trains 2 people in palliative care a year, and it's exceptionally hard to get onto. When we leave Ireland, we're also thinking of these, our futures, what we're going to do, how we're going to train in the future. I just think it would be silly for me to go home and try to train in palliative care at home because I know I won't get on the scheme.
Is there a possibility that if you get on a palliative care scheme in Australia, you might, obviously, fantastic experience and knowledge and learning, you might bring it back to Ireland?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I suppose, like, you know, if you were to get onto a scheme in Ireland, then you are obliged to stay. You know, the training is in Ireland. So there is an element of you are obliged to stay. Like, we're obliged to stay a year after we do our degree. Then if you were to, you know, if you want to, say, become a gastroenterologist consultant, you have to do the BST, which is 2 years where you're obliged to do in Ireland. And then I think it's another 4 or 5 years, which you're, again, obliged to do in Ireland. So we are obliged to stay. Do you know, so I don't quite understand what exactly
Joe, can
the
I
other
ask
gentleman means.
Question?
Yes, please, Tony.
Right.
Yes.
Joe's saying, for example, if you kind of get his legs straight, he seems to have an empathy and he's a good communicator.
Mm-hmm.
But, and he wanted to be a doctor, which is really important. So, say 6 or 7 years ago when Porrick was thinking of doing a medicine degree, if somebody had said to you, Porrick, you can only do this degree if you stay for 5 years in Ireland post-training, and we will take the total cost. Now, the costs are the figures issued by the HSE. The fee costs do not cover the cost of the course. It's the actual cost to deliver the course over the period is $300,000. So would you have then decided to do something else?
Should suffer.
But no, I'm asking you a question. Would you have decided to do medicine if that was a condition of doing the course? Or would you just say, I'll do something else?
Yeah, I don't know. It's always... I probably would have done something else, if I'm quite frank.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
So then we'd have less doctors.
Yeah. No, I don't
Joe O'Reilly, I'll come back to you in a sec, Tony.
Okay.
Joe O'Reilly, your point, please. Now, is this
a point
practical?
There, like, you know what I mean? When a doctor trains here, the state pay for everything. If you train in Australia...
Well, the state is a taxpayer.
That's right, the taxpayer. Yeah. The taxpayer in Ireland pays for it. If you train in Australia, you must stay for 4 or 5 years. You cannot leave.
Are you sure?
I'm nearly certain.
Let me fact check that upstairs.
Okay, check it up. Now, if you train in Dubai, you must stay for 10 years.
So what's your suggestion?
Our guys are leaving. It should be the same. Contract should be the same.
See, you can't have that. We're in the EU. Freedom of movement. Free Australia isn't in the EU. Dubai isn't in the EU.
If you train in the UK or if you train in America, we won't want to change in the EU then.
Well, there's freedom of movement. The UK aren't in the
profession,
EU.
Our profession.
Say again, we want to change what?
If you train as a doctor.
Yeah.
And the state provide finance for you.
Yeah.
The taxpayers entitled to that money back by working for the state.
Well, for nothing, like?
No, for a salary.
Yeah, and they'll pay tax on that salary.
That's okay, but they have to pay back what
they... And the more salary they get, the more tax they pay.
Look, I can tell you now, honest to God, Joe, I'm not going to really go down the road anymore. Because I went to a specialist. I paid him €300 for 10 minutes.
Okay.
And I was waiting for an X-ray for 5-6 weeks. And I got down an appointment for an X-ray. I'm still waiting for him. They're getting it done the 27th of the month.
Okay.
Nearly 2.5 months later.
Okay.
Like, it is absolutely criminal what's going on here with the medical service.
Do you know what I used to tell patients, because we had this all the time, and obviously, you know, kind of junior doctor essentially at the coal place, and you kind of get a lot of obviously really cross people who are dead right to be cross.
Yeah.
What I used to tell them was always to email your local TD, just inundate your local TD. it was always my very candid. Because I promise you, there's nothing we could do. It was a horrific system. It was really, again, so demoralizing to work in. You were just like, God, why are there all these things stopping me? Look, you know, because we go to college for 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
We know what medicine should look like. And then we work for a year and it doesn't look like what it should look like. My honest advice would be to anyone, inundate your local TD with emails and letters.
Okay, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Richard, how are you today after that ordeal?
Oh, hiya, Joe. I'm doing well.
What happened?
I'm doing well. We were flying from Zurich to Dublin.
Okay, Zurich, yeah.
We had a transfer flight from Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Okay.
So we got on the flight 7 o'clock, maybe an hour into it. There was a bad thunderstorm, lightning, terrible turbulence, which increased, it seems like, a long, long time. And as the time was going on, I mean, I was crying.
crying,
scream and praying, Jesus help us, and other people as well. I think it made it worse because we were at the back of the plane.
You were crying and praying.
I was crying, like, you know, when you pray loudly.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, help us. Oh, God, help us. Yeah, you know, so it was really very scary.
And what was happening at that stage?
There was thunder, lightning. The plane was turbulent, really bad turbulence. I've been on turbulent flights, but this was really, really bad. You felt like you didn't know where you were going to end up.
Were you dropping every now and again? The other way your stomach drops out.
Yeah.
And then what about lightning? Was the plane hit by lightning?
The plane was actually hit. There was one. There was lots of flashes of lightning, but there was one bad flash that it looked like fire. And, you know, it went right through the plane. We were at the very back and it came right, hit right down. But nobody was saying anything. I was with friends, and my husband was on one side and friends on the other. And I was saying, I want to get off. Just let me off. I felt like I was on a, what you call those things up in the air you go on, but you can't get off. One of them rides I hate, I'd never get on. But
A roller coaster.
I felt like I was on one of those.
And when the lightning hit the plane, was there an impact? Or was it just visual? Do you follow
me? Well, I mean, I felt there was an impact. I felt myself there was an impact, but nobody was saying anything.
Was your husband praying?
Well, he was. I don't think he was as bad as me. He was praying, yeah, but he wasn't screaming like I was or shouting. There were people crying. There was people behind me crying. But one man in front of me went into the crash landing position. And but then you see the plane up on the screen.
Yeah.
And I said to my husband, the plane is turning back. He said, no, it's not. It can't be. And I said, okay. Something is wrong. It's turning back. So they were over Paris. I thought maybe they'd land in Charles de Gaulle, but no, they turned back to Zurich. And
so you were right.
They told us that they had to turn back because they waited till we were landed, and then they told us they had to come back because the plane was hit by lightning.
Oh, good God.
And the I don't know what they call it, was damaged. But anyway, I was speaking to the air hostess, and I said, was the plane really hit? And she says, yes, it was hit, and the controls were damaged.
Oh, God.
And
So your prayers were answered, Bridget.
Yeah, but I went up, I left my, with all the panic and everything else, but what I thought was, they were excellent in keeping everybody calm on the plane.
And what did it, you know, by what, not telling you anything?
Not saying anything. And then, you know, near the end, as we were safe to land, now some people who knew about flying knew by reading the little television that's up there, by reading that, some of them were telling us after they knew we were in trouble, you know. But one woman stood up, was a bit panicked, stood up, and she was screamed at to sit back down. So, you know, you knew, you could feel there was tension, but yet it was dispersed by the captain was saying, we're very good pilots, and your safety is our first concern. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, speaking like that and saying we're landing, and, you know, but it was after we landed, and I went up to business. Not that I was in business class, I wasn't. I went up to business class and I said, I've left my ticket on the plane. Is there any way you can help me? And she says, were you on the flight to Dublin? And I said, yeah. I said, oh, she says, I've been speaking with the captain and some of the crew, and they're very shook up. And they're saying, you know, you really are lucky or blessed to be here.
Okay.
You know, so it was only after the fact that you kind of realised it wasn't was worse than we thought. But I found it very, very scary. You know, I really was very, very, very scared. But they put us up in a hotel.
Very good.
We went to the Jet Hotel. But there was one gentleman there. I'm sorry I didn't get his name. My husband said he'd email the hotel and tell them how good he was. Very good. Oh, with women, nice, with babies and everything.
Great, he was
helping them make bottles and saying, you know, have tea, have wine, have anything you like to drink. And, you know, I said, oh, I'd murder a cup of tea, and he brought me around, helped me make a cup of tea. And,
so you're back home safely.
Thank God, yeah, I'm back home safe.
What, do you have a special devotion to any saint? Who are you praying to?
No. Oh, I just go to the top. I pray to Jesus. I'm an old Ballyferry
well done, because it obviously worked. Karen Montani is there from Swissair in Zurich. Karen, how are you, Karen? Good afternoon. Thanks for coming on.
I'm fine, thank you. Hello.
Hello, how are you? And everyone safe and sound. The plane did have to turn back, did it, Karen?
Yes, the plane returned back to Zurich due to a lightning strike. This is a regular procedure because we have a maintenance base here in Zurich.
Okay, and when the plane was examined, how was it?
It was examined, but there was no damage, so the plane was back into service already this morning.
Okay, and your Irish, the passengers on the plane to Dublin all got back safe and sound.
That's correct. There was a regular landing. It was uneventful, and all passengers deboarded regularly. Lightning strikes, you must know, happen from time to time, and are basically not dangerous to an aircraft.
But they are frightening.
They can be frightening. I understand that for passengers, it can be a frightening experience.
And is it common, Karen?
It's not uncommon, but, I mean, it depends on how many thunderstorms you have, and it happens from time to time, but it's not very common.
Okay. And could the aircraft have continued to Dublin?
It could have. That's correct. It's based on a decision by our cockpit crew.
Yes,
and if it happens right after the takeoff, we usually return back to Zurich, as I said, because we do have an ideal maintenance base here.
Okay. And Bridget Staple, and Bridget, were you nervous getting back on the plane?
I wasn't until the captain, it was a lady captain, said that we're back on the plane. The maintenance crew looked after it. There were three.
Oh, you were back on the same plane?
Yeah. And okay. They said there were three something plugs fixed, whatever they were called, I can't remember. And I said, oh, my goodness, we're back on the same plane. I'd rather not have heard that. But anyway, I knew that.
Okay, your rosary beads were out again, were they? they were worn to flitters.
Yeah, but just to say to Karen, whoever that gentleman was in the Jet Hotel and their staff.
The Jet Hotel, okay.
The staff were really, really nice.
Okay. Would you pass?
Good to know. Thank you.
Okay, would you pass on our thanks, Karen.
I will do so. Thank you
very much. Everyone in Swissair. You're a great airline. Thanks indeed.
Thank you so much.
That's
very kind.
Thank you. Bridget, you mind yourself. So, by the way, the patron saint, if you don't want to go straight to the top and you want to go to the patron saint of flying, it's St. Joseph of Cupertino.
Oh, so that's who you're called after, is it, John?
Yeah, because I love a cup of, I'd love a cup of tea now. St. Joseph, Cupertino. God bless you, Bridget. God bless you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Carmel O'Shea, give a warning to people. Now, I want everyone who's in a WhatsApp group to WhatsApp what's about to happen, did happen to this woman. Will you please? Everyone is in a WhatsApp group. We are inundated with calls of people who are being scammed in WhatsApp groups. Carmel O'Shea, what happened?
Hi, Joe. Still in shock. On Tuesday, I got a WhatsApp. It came at about 11 o'clock, but I didn't realise it until, we say, about 2. And in it was, "Hi, Mom, my phone has crashed. I'm using my friend's phone. Can you just let me know that you got this message?"
Okay.
So my son was going to France that evening. He was going on the ferry at 9 o'clock. So when I seen this, I panicked. And then it was, I sent the WhatsApp back and said, and he said, "Let me know, did you get this number?" And I text back, "Yeah, Adam. Yeah, is that Adam?" And then the message was, "I can't make a call from this number. I can only do text, so we just go text because the microphone is gone on the phone." So then it was, "Mom, I'm going to buy a phone. can you send me your cards? And I said, listen, Adam, I you know me, and
well, when you say you said, you're texting.
Yeah, we're texting on WhatsApp.
Didn't say anything
because he couldn't use the phone.
Well, you would have spotted that immediately because it wouldn't have been his voice. But they managed to get the name of your son out of you, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
You said, is that you, Adam? I know, but this is a warning to people, Carmen. It's awful.
Yeah.
So they text back saying, can't talk, need money, needs phone, or the speaker is broke, phone is broke.
Yeah.
And what was the final straw that made you send him money?
It was, Mom, he needed the phone. You see, on my mind was he needed a phone. He was travelling around in a van. So he needed, my thing was, he needs the map, you know, the Google map.
Yeah, well, he won't. What age is your son? What age is Adam?
Don't go there. Don't go there.
Okay.
And you know what, Joe?
Because someone else said it. Yeah, okay. How much did you send to this courier who robbed the money off you?
Okay, Joe. Literally, I was kicking myself, but I realised mother's love.
I know.
Goes beyond money.
I know, that's what they're banking on, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it was. But I sent him my cards, that one doesn't work, send me another card. Oh, Mom, God, that one doesn't work. Have you any other cards, Mom? Because none of them are working. And it was all Mom. Anyway.
How much did it get?
$1,002. The first initial one was, Mom, send $995. Is there money in the account for that, Mom? I said, yeah, there's money for a phone and that. Oh, and then it was, $1,000. He says, yeah, I need a phone, I need a watch as well.
Ah, good luck. So this share of scammers were really milking it.
But not alone that. In the meantime, I came down to my husband and I was saying, listen, Adam, will you just press that button and send that money? He needs the phone. He said, Mom, he said, you know, Carmel, I've got Adam on the phone. I said, he hasn't got a phone. He hasn't got a phone. He's texting me. Anyway, he had a work phone. So we got him on the work phone. And he says, no, Mom, it's not me.
Of course.
At that stage, I had sent all my cards, like, hello.
Oh, God.
Don't go there.
Yeah. In every WhatsApp group now, when people just send out WhatsApp, there's a WhatsApp scam going around. Don't send any money until you verify it outside of WhatsApp. Until you verify it outside of WhatsApp. You have to ask
them. The thing, Joe, I had the phone, so I was on the phone, so I couldn't even phone
him. And by the way, he'd survive without a phone. He would survive without a phone.
Oh, Joe, are you going to give out to me now?
No, I'm not. I want people, because we had a woman on the other day, Carmen, she was crying.
I know.
She didn't have, I think she was scammed for $2,000. She doesn't have that. But it's gone,
and the
bank say, well, you gave the details.
I know.
What do you expect us to do? You're down what? You're down £1,300 nearly.
Yeah.
Good God. Yeah. Good God.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just saying, will people alert each other? And by the way, they are so smart. They know what they're doing. They're just picking numbers out of the blue. It's a whole gang of them in some wherever they operate from, Russia or whatever, just picking numbers out of the blue. And they're banging, hi, Mom, this is your son, I need, they don't say, hi, Mom, I'm stuck, I need help with my phone. You say, rightly so, is that you, Adam? They say, yeah, Ma, it's me, Adam, no phone, stuck, need money now, please. And then, did one of them not say the other day when the woman was hesitating, because we had a good few calls, he said, well, if you really love me, you'll send me the money. Something like this.
But the thing about it was, he was saying,
they are devious
gits. What are you doing, Mom? Will you hurry up? Please hurry up. Send me the other card.
Well, you're not to feel stupid, because a lot of people have been done, Carmel, unfortunately. Okay, so please. But it's a lesson. It's a lesson. And I just want people to put it in the WhatsApp group now. Stop it. Do not send money over because of WhatsApp messages. Hear a voice. Ask a question. What's your granny's maiden name? What's our dog who died 3 months ago? What was it? You know what I mean?
I know, Joe. It's easy to laugh now.
No, but you're very good for ringing. I think you're very brave for ringing. And I really appreciate it. But I'm saying to people, please just do two lines into your WhatsApp group now and ask them to spread it around. There's a WhatsApp money scam going around. Do not pass over a penny or a credit card or anything on WhatsApp. Through WhatsApp messages. Nothing to do with WhatsApp, by the way. They're just chancing their arm.
Yeah.
And they'd fleece you, which they did with you. Okay.
Yeah.
Had you got that money lined up for anything? Don't tell me you're going on a holiday or...
Oh, God, no, Joe. That was just cost of living.
Cost of living money,
yeah. It's the cost of living. It's the cost of living. That's had to take me so long to get that, you know.
I'm so sorry, Carmel.
Listen, I have to say, Joe, thanks very much for all the things that you've done and just let me have my voice over the phone and to be aware of anybody else.
I couldn't believe it.
No problem.
And you know what Adam knows now, Carmel, that his mother really, really loves him. And she'd never reveal his age on national radio.
Yeah.
She'd reveal her own age before she reveals his age. He's loved. He texts me.
I'm having a great time in France, ma'am.
Yeah, okay. He's a good lad, is he?
He is a good lad.
Bit of going and bit of adventure, great.
Okay,
Carmel, listen, you mind yourself, Petal. Thank you so much. WhatsApp groups, don't send money. Don't send money.
0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Cora Clark is in Perth in Australia, there for 6 years, a medic. Are you coming back, Cora? Cora? Okay, the line is gone. Unfortunately, but I can tell you she said no, she's not coming back. We'll probably talk to her tomorrow. Remember, Fate Leg Hotel, Funny Friday tomorrow week, the end of August, and then on Monday, if you have stories, ideas, or folklore you heard about Michael Collins, joe@rt.ie. Brendan Dunne, who produced. Catherine Thomas is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.